Yashodanandana Vrajadanarayana Yashodanandana Vrajadanarayana Yashodanandana Vrajadanarayana Upadeshamrita, the nectar of instruction, text number 5. First of all, I should apologize for the fact that I'm sitting here. We announced last time that there would be a special guest today. His name is Kalakantapru, and he's a wonderful poet and writer and senior Vaishnava, disciple of Srila Prabhupada. And he was going to drive from Florida all the way to Vancouver, which is about as far as you can drive in the continental United States. They decided not to. They're going to fly instead. And the plane doesn't stop in Boise. So, unfortunately, we missed out on a nice lecture. So instead, you'll have to tolerate me. But we can still continue with Nectar of Instruction, where we're at. Let's see. So please repeat after me.
Krishneti yasya giritam manasadriyeta.
Krishneti yasya giritam manasadriyeta.
Krishneti yasya giritam manasadriyeta.
Krishneti yasya giritam manasadriyeta.
Dikshasti chet pranati bhischa bhajantam isham.
Dikshasti chet pranati
Dikshasti chet pranati bhischa bhajantam isham.
Dikshasti chet pranati bhischa bhajantam isham.
Shushrushaya bhajana vignyam ananyamanya.
Shushrushaya bhajana vignyam ananyamanya.
Shushrushaya bhajana vignyam ananyamanya.
Shushrushaya bhajana
Nindadi shunya hridam ipsita sangalabhya.
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 Translation and purpose by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. One should mentally honor the devotee who chants the holy name of Lord Krishna. One should offer humble obeisances to the devotee who has undergone spiritual initiation, diksha, and is engaged in worshipping the deity. And one should associate with and faithfully serve that pure devotee who is advanced in undeviated devotional service and whose heart is completely devoid of the propensity to criticize others. Purport. This is 12 or 13 pages long, so we won't read the whole thing. In order to intelligently apply the sixfold loving reciprocations mentioned in the previous verse, one must select proper persons with careful discrimination. Srila Rupa Goswami therefore advises that we should meet with the Vaishnavas in an appropriate way, according to their particular status. In this verse, he tells us how to deal with the three types of devotees, the Kanishtha Adhikaris, the Madhyama Adhikaris, and the Uttama Adhikaris. The Kanishtha Adhikaris is a neophyte who has received the Harinam initiation from the spiritual master and is trying to chant the holy name of Krishna. One should respect such a person within his mind as a Kanishtha Vaishnava. A Madhyama Adhikari has received spiritual initiation from the spiritual master and has been fully engaged by him in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. The Madhyama Adhikari should be considered to be situated midway in devotional service. The Uttama Adhikari, or highest devotee, is one who is very advanced in devotional service. An Uttama Adhikari is not interested in blaspheming others. His heart is completely clean, and he has attained the realized state of unalloyed Krishna consciousness. According to Srila Rupa Goswami, the association and service of such a Mahabhagavat, or perfect Vaishnava, is most desirable. One should not remain a Kanishtha Adhikari, one who is situated on the lowest platform in devotional service, and is interested only in worshipping the deity in the temple. Such a devotee is described in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Archayame vaharaye pujam yashraddaye hate natad bhakteshu chanyeshu sabhakta prakrita smrita. A person who is very faithfully engaged in the worship of the deity in the temple, but who does not know how to behave toward devotees or people in general, is called a Prakrita Bhakta or Kanishtha Adhikari. One therefore has to raise himself from the position of Kanishtha Adhikari to the platform of Madhyama Adhikari. The Madhyama Adhikari is described in Srimad Bhagavatam in this way. Ishvare tadadhineshu balesheshu dvishatsucha prema maitri kripopeksha yakaroti samadhyamaha. The Madhyama Adhikari is a devotee who worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the highest object of love, makes friends with the Lord's devotees, is merciful to the ignorant, and avoids those who are envious by nature. Unquote. This is the way to cultivate devotional service properly. Therefore, in this verse, Sri Rupa Goswami has advised us how to treat various devotees. We can see from practical experience that there are different types of Vaishnavas. The Prakrita Sahajiyas generally chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, yet they are attached to women, money, and intoxication. Although such persons may chant the holy name of the Lord, they are not yet properly purified. Such people should be respected within one's mind, but their association should be avoided. Those who are innocent but simply carried away by bad association should be shown favor if they are eager to receive proper instruction from pure devotees. But those neophyte devotees who are actually initiated by the bona fide spiritual master and are seriously engaged in carrying out the orders of the spiritual master should be offered respectful obeisances. In this Krishna consciousness movement, a chance is given to everyone without discrimination of caste, creed or color. Everyone is invited to join this movement, sit with us, take prasad and hear about Krishna. When we see that someone is actually interested in Krishna consciousness and wants to be initiated, we accept him as a disciple for the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. When a neophyte devotee is actually initiated and engaged in devotional service by the orders of the spiritual master, he should be accepted immediately as a bona fide Vaishnava, and obeisances should be offered unto him. Out of many such Vaishnavas, one may be found to be very seriously engaged in the service of the Lord, and strictly following all the regulated principles, chanting the prescribed number of rounds on japa beads, and always thinking of how to expand the Krishna consciousness movement. Such a Vaishnava should be accepted as an Uttama Adhikari, a highly advanced devotee, and his association should always be sought. The process by which a devotee becomes attached to Krishna is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Diksha kale bhakta kare atma samarpan, sei kale krishna tare kare atma sham. At the time of initiation, when a devotee fully surrenders to himself to the service of the Lord, Krishna accepts him to be as good as he himself. Should we continue? We stop. Yeah, let's stop there for now. Om Gyan Timiram Dasya Gnanan Jana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhyate Kirim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinataranam Paramananda Madhavam. So, let's see here. One should mentally honor the devotee who chants the holy names of Lord Krishna. One should offer humble obeisances to the devotee who has undergone spiritual initiation, diksha, and is engaged in worshipping the deity, and one should associate with and faithfully serve that pure devotee who is advanced in undeviated devotional service and whose heart is completely devoid of the propensity to criticize others. So, last time we got such a nice explanation, a description of the fourth verse of Nectar of Instruction by Jayadvaita Maharaj. And one of the points he was making was how important it is, that one engage in these six exchanges. And especially, of course, his focus on that class was on Guhyam Akhyati Prichati, inquiring and revealing one's mind confidentially. And he was emphasizing, we made a whole list of different things that happen when one doesn't do that, what can result from it. So the natural conclusion was one should do it. Right? Now, the question that was raised later on towards the end of the class was, how can you engage in such exchanges? What's the process? And that's basically what Rupa Goswami is discussing here in this verse. The question arises, is with whom should one engage in these six loving exchanges? Because certainly not everyone. You don't reveal your mind, and again, this point was made last time, you don't reveal your mind confidentially to just anyone. You don't eat food from just anyone. You don't. These are exchanges of love, so there has to be some kind of a relationship there, some kind of a trust there. So then how does one select what kind of association you should do? Because remember, in the first three verses, we got repeatedly, or second and third especially, we got repeatedly this point emphasized, that you need association, right? It says, jana sangha should be given up, and sato vritte, follow in the footsteps, and cultivate good association. Again and again, this point was made. Then, in the fourth verse, he defined what does association mean. Association means engaging in these four kinds of activities. And then the question is, well, how do you identify what is good association and what is bad? What is jana sangha and what is good sangha? Right? How do you identify this? And that Rupa Goswami is given here in this verse. Basically, he has a classification system into three divisions: Kanishtadikari, Madhyamadikari, and Uttamadikari. The neophyte devotee, the medium devotee, and the advanced devotee. Now, the first question that one can ask, or that might arise here, is why should we discriminate like this? Isn't this being judgmental, or isn't this being in some way putting down others and favoring others? We live in a society, in a culture that really highly values equality. And everyone should get the same kind of treatment. Equality is very, it's enshrined in our way of thinking, in our constitution, especially here in America, right? We have, for we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. So it's considered to be self-evident, svata pramana, that all men are created equal. But in what sense created equal? In what sense? Because the Vedic culture, the Vedic tradition, doesn't actually accept the fact that all men are created equal. All men are created equal, yes, but all men do not act equally, or not at the same platform. They don't behave the same way. They haven't progressed to the same equal platform. And therefore, the way a person should be dealt with, the way a person has to be interacted with, depends on that person's position. This is actually true of any ancient culture of the world. The idea, the notion of equality on a material platform, on a material level. On the spiritual level, everyone's equal. Right? That's a given fact. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, right, that there's no... there's no gender for the soul, there's no inside, there's no outside, there's no better or worse. Everyone, on a spiritual level, everyone is created equally. That's a fact, there's no doubt about that. In the eyes of God, all of us are living entities. Not just, and so much so that Prabhupada would often make the point, not just human beings even, but the Lord's equality from a spiritual standpoint, equality goes past any kind of material designation. So the animal is completely equal to human beings, spiritually speaking. Right? There's no difference between the cow, the tiger, and the human being. But on a material platform, right? And again, Prabhupada makes this point, this particular example, he says, on a material platform, there's a difference. If you want to show compassion to a cow, you might go and feed it a carrot or some grass. But if you want to show compassion to a tiger, you don't go up to it and feed it something. Right? You stay away, you keep the distance. You have to deal appropriate to that person's, you might throw him something from a distance. Right? When on these zoos, when the proprietors have to feed the tigers, my brother was telling me when in Africa, in Kenya, you get these really ferocious tigers on in zoos, and they're not like the tigers if you go here to the Boise Zoo, you'll find they're really tame, like a cat. It's very calm and peaceful. These are taken right from the wild, and they're really, really super, super ferocious creatures, super ferocious beings. And he said, when the keepers, they feed them, then they feed them with real fear. You know, they'll take the dead animal or whatever it might be, just throw it to him from as far a distance as possible. Because so often it's happened that the keeper got too close and he got his hand taken with the meat that he was serving the tiger, or with one slap they can kill you, just one slap and you're dead. It's a very powerful creature. So clearly you don't treat them equally as you might do a cow. You go to a cow, you can be much more close to them, or cat is even so. Different living entities you'll treat differently. To a snake you don't show compassion, you just keep your distance and that's it, you know. So different living entities require different types of compassion or different types of dealing. So on a material level, we're not equal. And Every culture of the world, ancient culture of the world, basically accepted this fact. If you go to ancient China, the same thing. Their basic philosophy was not one of equality. Different human beings, different living entities are at different points, different levels. And one must recognize them in order to treat them properly. Not that in order to give them what they deserve, but also in order to interact with them appropriately so that they also are happy. Every individual likes to be treated according to the position they're in, according to to their own nature, according to their own qualities, right? A tiger appreciates it when you maintain distance, right? A tiger appreciates that fact. When he walks into a room, he likes to see everyone cower in fear, right? This is the tiger's nature. But when a homely dog comes, he doesn't like everyone to keep a distance. He wants to jump up on your lap. But again, a donkey you won't have coming up. This is again an Aesop's fable. It illustrates the point very well, actually. It said that once a washerman had two animals. He had a dog and he had a donkey. And every day he'd load the donkey up with his clothing and take it down to the washing cart, and he'd clean the laundry, and then he'd load all the wet stuff back, and these donkeys are very tired. And at the end of the day, he just let the donkey loose and he could eat whatever grass was growing around, and that's it. And when he'd come home, the dog, he would jump up on the master's lap and licking the master, and he'd feed him with his own hand. They'd play and he'd throw a ball and run around. And one day the donkey got really fried seeing this, and he went to the dog and he said, what's this, Is here I'm working so hard day and night, and my master doesn't even give any kind of, you're not doing anything, and you're getting all kinds of, privileges around the house. This is completely inappropriate. He said, I don't. And the dog, he's super cunning, not a very nice fellow. So he gives him some advice. He says, yeah. The only problem is, you see, you're the stupid one. You're the one. You're the cause of your own problem. He said, you don't act in an affectionate way to your master. If you just do like I do, jump up on his lap, sit down, lick him, bark at him, do nice things like that, run around, the master will appreciate it and you get the same affection. So naturally, the donkey does the same thing. The master comes home one night, instead of going to eat his grass, he jumps up on the master's lap and starts braying what he thinks in a very cute way, and running around, and the master completely freaks out. And instead of giving him an affection, he just beats him into the ground, just beats him and beats him. What do you think you've done, crazy guy? And the poor thing's even worse off than you started, and the dog's kind of protected. So in other words, the point being that the situation is appropriate depending on what that person's, what he's like. He's got a different body, different animal, different type of relationship is appropriate with him and with the master. Right? And in general, animals you find appreciated. If you look at a bull, and many devotees who work with bulls, they'll tell you this, that bulls like to work in the field. Bulls are working animals, and they really, at the end of the day, when they come home from the field, they feel satisfied. Sometimes animal rights activists, for example, will say, you cannot do this to an animal. You cannot, tie him up and take him out into the field. But yes, that's true. You cannot tie a cat up and take her into the field, right? Because cats are not like that. They're independent, spirited animals, right? People talk about, it's like herding cats, right? You cannot herd a cat. But for bulls, it's very satisfying to work hard. Horses like to run. You take a horse on a gallop, the horse comes back feeling satisfied, well exercised, good muscles, everything. Right? Dogs like to run. So how you show compassion to a bull, showing compassion to a bull might be to tie it with a thing and take it out into the field to plow. Where showing compassion to a cat might be to give it a bowl of milk and leave it on its own, right? Not disturb it, not bother it. So that's why it's said that in the material world, what constitutes equality is a very different thing than on a spiritual platform. A spiritual platform, everyone is equal, everyone has an equal relationship with Krishna. But on a material platform, we have to see everyone's at different positions, different statuses of life. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Mama Vartmanu Vartante Manushyaha Partha Sarvashaha. He says that everyone in this world, he says, O Partha, O Arjuna, is on my path. Everyone's on my path. And therefore some people take this verse and they interpret and say, that means everyone's equal, therefore. Everyone's the same. But no, Krishna says, everyone's on my path means everyone's on his path. But like on any path, someone's farther ahead, someone's farther behind. Someone's going forward, someone might be walking backwards on that path. Someone's just sitting around, hanging around. Someone's distracted. Someone's tired. Someone's injured. Someone's running. Someone's walking. So on a path, you go to the green belt. Everyone's on the green belt on Saturdays. Right? But everyone's at different positions, different points, and doing different things, enjoying the green belt in different ways. So everyone's on Krishna's path, but everyone's at different positions. Everyone's taking advantage of Krishna in a different way, appreciating or rejecting him in a different way. And according to that, we have to deal with them appropriately. This is how we take association. Association is not taken indiscriminately. We don't believe in a new agey type of let's love the world and let's go hug everyone. No, this is not. Our method is we love the world, but we provide that love in a manner that's appropriate to the person you're loving. How love is accepted or understood. You have to give love in the way that love is appreciated by the person you're loving. Because if you give love in a particular way and the person doesn't understand that language of love, then they won't appreciate it. Right? So, three types of devotees. Kanishtha, Madhyama and Uttama. The neophyte, the middle and the advanced devotee. And there's actually two different definitions or sets of definitions that are given in this purport, in this verse, for how to distinguish between the basic devotee, the mediocre, and the advanced. Basically, the verse tells us what to do. Prabhupada quotes a verse here from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Lord Chaitanya says, someone who chants the holy name of Krishna even once, Ek Naam, he says, one time chants the holy name, that person should be regarded as a Vaishnava. He has to be regarded as a devotee of the Lord. And therefore, he has to be respected. Anyone who chants the holy name even once has to be respected. He's a Vaishnava. But that respect should be displayed in different ways according to that person's level of advancement. For someone who's just taken to the chanting, to the process of chanting the holy name, and is worshipping God, but is on the neophyte level, that person you should respect in the mind. You respect that person from a distance, in other words. You don't need to associate too closely with them, unless it's to help them. But otherwise, you associate from a distance. For someone who's on the middle platform of devotional service, you offer obeisances to them, physically. Pranathibis. You bow down to them. And for someone who's on the advanced platform of devotional service, the Uttamadhikari, for them you faithfully serve them and you associate with them. You try to get as much association as possible, follow their instructions and to serve them faithfully. Because by such association, sato vritte, your devotional service will become perfect. So three types of association, three types of ways you should interact. Now, the big question becomes, the real kind of the million-dollar question, is who is or how do you decide who's in the Kanishtha stage, who's in the Madhyama stage, and who's on the Uttama stage? That's the big question. And this verse gives two or three different kind of schemes or definitions for how to understand or to classify who's at what place. The first thing we have to do, actually, the very first thing we have to do is, before we start classifying others, we have to first understand where we're at. And this is the number one thing. Because kind of every living entity, every person, we have a tendency to overestimate ourselves and underestimate others. That person is not capable of doing this. That person is not this. That person cannot do it. But of course, I can do it. Of course, I'm like this. Of course, I'm this. Like, we overestimate ourselves and underestimate others. So the first thing we have to do is get a realistic picture of ourselves. It's just like Jesus Christ says, right? See the log in your own eye before you see the speck in your brother's. Something like that. So we have to do that first. We find out where we're at. And then, once we understand our own platform, we'll also be able to understand how capable we are of understanding the platform of others. Right? Because the point is also to understand where others are at, you need a certain level of understanding yourself, a level of advancement yourself. An advanced devotee or a middle-class devotee is able to see everyone in their proper position, but a Kanishtha Adhikari, a neophyte devotee, is not. So the first thing we do is we try to get an understanding of where we're at. Why would we want to do this? Yeah.
So if we're asking that question, then we're definitely
Karya. Asking what question?
You said it's a $1 million question. Oh. Where we're at. So you answer the question.
Why? If you ask that question, you're Kanishtha?
Yeah, because you just said a little.
He wants me to get that answer.
No.
Right.
You're asking that question.
No, so if we figure it out after today's class, then we can become Madhyama Adhikaris. No? Prabhupada, in the last paragraph of this purport, he says, the devotee should also know his own position and should not try to imitate a devotee situated on a higher platform. Rupa Goswami advises the devotee to be intelligent enough to distinguish between the Kanishtha Adhikari and Madhyama Adhikari. In the last paragraph of this purport. Why? Why would you want to know the these three, the position, the why would you want to know or be able to distinguish people based on this classification? What benefit will it do us to be able to see ourselves or to see others in these three terms? How is it going to help? Yeah, for one thing is to find out how to interact with others, right? And why is that going to help? Proper interaction. Knowing how to interact. Yeah, because then we can find out good association that will actually be beneficial for us. And we can maintain good relationships. Because when we interact nicely with everyone, right? You interact properly with a tiger, you can maintain a good relationship with a tiger. You interact properly with a bull, you can maintain a good relationship with a bull. It's like the zodiac thing, right? Everyone likes to figure out what is it called? What sign you are? I'm Aries, or I'm the Taurus, or I'm this, or I'm that, right? You can figure out, this person's nature is like this, this person's nature is like this, this person's going to be like that. So you can understand how to interact with this person. Oh, he's just like this because he's you know, whatever, Gemini or something. Right? So in the same way, you can figure out how to interact with others. In this way, maintain peaceful relationships and find association that's good for you. And why is it good to know your own position? Because you can then figure out how to advance. If you're lucky enough to find out that you're Uttam Adhikari platform, well then, okay. But in case, just in case, we discover that we're not Uttam Adhikaris, then we know this is what I have to work towards, right? We know this is how I have to, this is what I have to work on. These are the characteristics of a middle-class devotee, this is what I've got to develop. Or these are the characteristics of an upper-class devotee, this is what I have to develop. Oh, I'm behaving like this, this is the characteristics of a neophyte devotee, maybe I shouldn't behave like this. Right? So we can see for ourselves where we're at, and in this way we can try to improve. So the purpose is self-improvement and good association or good relationships with others. These two reasons make it necessary that we have viveka, or the power of discrimination. Viveka, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, viveka is one of the qualities of knowledge. It's one of the aspects of knowledge, the ability to distinguish, between things. The word discriminate has a negative connotation in the English language today. Discrimination means putting down someone. So maybe we can use the word distinguish. This is actually a very important point. This is what Rupa Goswami is suggesting here is not discrimination like we use the word today. He's not suggesting that we put anyone down. Because in each of the three cases, what is he asking us to do? Respect them. Right? In each of the three cases. He's just describing the best method of respecting them. How can that respect be best socially acceptable and appreciated? That's all. He's not saying, if you happen to meet a neophyte devotee on the road, spit and take a shower afterwards. You know, he's not saying that, right? This is not the point. This is what we think of discrimination in the English language as the word is used today. You discriminate against black people, or discriminate against women. No, that's not. We respect everyone. Everyone's a Vaishnava, Lord Chaitanya says that. One's chanted once. Right? But how to express that respect, that's the difference. That's what's being described here. Now, what are the characteristics of the neophyte devotee? Can anyone say, based on what you've read, what we've read together?
Distinguish
what? Yeah, exactly. More specifically.
He doesn't want to be with anyone, Krishna and myself.
Yeah.
That's all.
Exactly. He knows how to honor or respect God, but he cannot see God's presence in other living entities. He doesn't know how to respect, especially the devotees of the Lord, or any other living entity. He has a very narrow vision. This is the opposite of Mahatma. Prabhupada explains in Bhagavad Gita, Mahatma means one who's got a broad vision, Maha. Broad vision, broad-minded. And the Duratma is one who's got a narrow vision, sees things in a very narrow way. So, you find that kind of a neophyte level in every religion of the world. There's a certain class of people who are satisfied, who find God in the temple or in the church or in their particular ritual or worship, but are unable to take their practice beyond that, out into the world, and actually see the Lord's presence in every living entity and interact with individuals as devotees of the Lord. They're not able to do that. So you see, in India, millions of people will come to the temple, they'll bow before the deity, they'll put something in the box, and that's it. And then they'll go home and they'll go on continuing their sinful activities. My relationship is with God. And they'll fight with the whole world, but my relationship is with God. I worship the Lord. This is the Kanishtha idea, the Kanishtha relationship, the Kanishtha effect. Even you have Kanishtha Adhikari gurus, spiritual masters, spiritual teachers. So many of them, these priests or pundits, they'll come to your house, they'll do a puja. You need to do this and this puja to get this and this thing. That way we can please God, we can please this demigod, we can do this. They're going to fix up your relationship with God. You're going to get some punya and poof, they're gone. Does your life change from it? No. Does the way you interact with others, does that change? No. Does the way you do your business, are you more honest? Are you more? No, that doesn't change. It has no effect beyond your limited vision. Here is God, this is who He is. That's called Kanishtha mentality. So you also get the flip side. You get the other problem often in India also. You've got this saying, Nar Seva, Narayan Seva, right? Jan Seva, Janardhan Seva. There's another one also. Mana Seva, Mata Seva. you get this also. Which is fine. It's okay. But the point is, that's going too far in the other direction. That's reducing God to a poor human being, like the Daridra Narayan philosophy. That making Narayan Daridra, making God poor, and forgetting that Krishna has his own independent transcendental existence, forgetting to serve Krishna. So on one side, it's also another form of neophyte. Actually, that Janseva, Janardhan Seva is worse. That's Mayavad. Prabhupada explains in the purport that Mayavad is worse. See, the neophyte devotee, he sees Krishna, and then he doesn't see Krishna anywhere else. This other person, Nariseva, Narayan Seva type people, they see Krishna, they see the divine everywhere, but forget about Krishna. They don't see Krishna's independent existence. So they've got the opposite problem. One is too limited on Krishna, the other doesn't even know Krishna. All he sees is poor human beings. Both people are problematic. But the one you've described, he's actually more problematic. Because the person who sees Krishna, gradually his vision will increase. Because Krishna includes everyone. But a person who is unable to see Krishna, and who's able to see only a human being, and confuses the human being for God, that person will never be able to see God, will never be able to see Krishna. Because the human being doesn't include God, but God includes the human being. We don't include Krishna, but Krishna includes us. So it's better to see just Krishna, because that'll help one to broaden your vision. Whereas if you become too diffuse and you don't see Krishna, then it's lost. Yeah.
The spiritual materials, or when they say spiritual things, you're kind of in that direction. There's nothing to do with the transcendental.
Right.
It's spiritual when it's material, perhaps a material attempt.
Yeah. Yeah, in other words, God becomes lost in his creation. You don't worship God independently. Such people have the opposite problem. Namely that if you talk to... I've spoken to many of such people, and if you talk to them, then you see, for the neophyte, for the Kanishtha Adhikari, God is present in the temple and nowhere else. For these other types of people, God is present everywhere except in the temple. Such people, I've seen, they'll say God is everywhere, right? But if you ask them to come to the temple and bow down, then they say, no, this is just stone. I'm not going to bow down here. God is present in the poor man in the street. I'm not going to come to the temple. But the logic doesn't work. God is present in the poor man in the street. Why is he not present here then? Right? It's simply the flip side of the same thing. It's a limited vision. It's the inability to give God his own existence, his own place, his own identity. One person sees the president, sees Bush, but then doesn't understand Bush's all-pervading power and presence throughout the whole country. The other person understands the government's power throughout the whole country, but refuses to give Bush his own identity. Right? Of the two, Krishna finds the latter more offensive because it attacks him personally. If someone accepts Bush's personal identity but fails to understand the extent of his presence throughout the world, actually, the amount of influence he wields, then he's forgivable. But if someone refuses to allow Bush his own identity as a person, then Mr. Bush will not like that. It's going to be a personal insult. So of the two, Krishna, he doesn't appreciate the second variety. He considers those worse. Because for the first person, you can display your power, like Krishna did for the universal form to the Kauravas. You know, show your Shakti, and everyone goes, okay, I agree, you're present everywhere, I understand. But for the other variety, what can you do? Even if Krishna comes and stands before them, they say, no, you're not there. You're not Krishna. The Krishna is here in the poor man in the street. So we need to find the devotee's vision, the actual devotee's vision is integrated. They can see Krishna for who he is, and they can see every living entity as part and parcel of Krishna. That's an integrated vision. You give God his own identity, his own space, and you give every living entity a part and parcel, a position with the Lord. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. No, it's that's correct. The majority of people are like that. They're just ignorant. And what they're doing is a good thing. Krishna says in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he gives a whole hierarchy of things. He says, become my pure devotee. If you cannot do that, then you engage in the regulative principles of devotional service, Vaidhi Bhakti. If you cannot do that, then you offer the results of your work for me, to me. Give a portion of your results to me. If you cannot even do that, then just give the results of your work to someone. Do some kind of good welfare work to the world. So he accepts, that's good. It's a positive thing. It's a step down, but it's a good thing. So you're right, the majority of people are like that. But there's a few people who develop a philosophy out of it that's impersonalistic. That's what we're talking about, discussing. Some people actually actively, unfortunately, use that philosophy to deny the Lord's personal presence and his personal opulence. And those are the people. And I remember one time we had one person like that who came to the temple. He was a great spiritual leader, like a very respectable personality from India. And he gave a great lecture and powerful speech and everything, and so many people attended and this and that. And then as is formality, you know, we invited him, please come to the temple. And he came to accept our invitation. He walked into the temple and he could not get his head to bow before the Lord. What to speak of paying obeisances? He couldn't even get... His wife was doing this, you know. He could not... His head would not bend in front of the Lord. He was ready to bend his head in front of everyone else, but he could not bend his head in front of the Lord. This is what we're speaking of. This is called Mayavad. That everyone is God, I'm God, but when God shows himself, then he's not God. Then I won't accept him. This is the same thing with the Kauravas. They're ready to accept everyone's greatness, everyone's power. But when Krishna's standing there in front of them, then no, he's not. He's just some. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. This is the point. He chose the army of Krishna, not Krishna. Army of Krishna means what? Krishna's presence everywhere, his power. But Krishna's own person, he could not appreciate. You see? That was the problem. So anyway, that's the Kanishtha Adhikari. Actually, it's nice. We spoke of the Kanishtha Adhikari and the person just below that. Prabhupada talks about him in this purport a little later on. The impersonalist. And then above him is the Kanishtha Adhikari. Those who see the Lord in the temple, but cannot see him in other living entities. Hanuman Swami, he says, to make the point extremely clear, he says, Osama bin Laden is a good example, he says, of a Kanishtha Adhikari. It's difficult for us to think of him as anything, but... but you know, he's worshipping God. And you think, my God, you know, how can someone like that be even taking the name of the Lord? He seems to be motivated in service to God. He's a extreme example of a Kanishtha Adhikari. He's able to see a relationship with God, some kind of relationship he himself has. But he's completely incapable of seeing that relationship, that the importance or the presence of God in any other living entity. So he's willing to inflict the most horrendous suffering on others in the name of his relationship with God. Right? That's a Kanishtha Adhikari. As Kanishtha as you can get. His vision is completely narrow. Not just God, but God as I call him God, in the way I understand God. That's God. I've got my relationship with that God, and everyone else is worth destroying. Yeah, respect him in the mind. And this is where we have to be thankful that he doesn't require us to pay obeisances or associate with him, right? This is exactly, it proves the point so well that why it's so important to deal appropriately according to a person's position. Because if we truly believed in equality, we would say, look, he's taking the name of God, let's go associate with him, take his association. But no. In the mind only. Right? Yeah, so see, okay, now this is another point. This is another point. Hold this question, right? How to deal with the Kanishtha Adhikari, right? Let's hold this question for a little later because we need to understand what Madhyama is before we get back. It's a very good question that we'll talk about. So now the Madhyama Adhikari. The Madhyama Adhikari is what? What definition have we read already? He's initiated?
The word stipendious associates with like-minded.
Right. The Kanishtha is only able to see Krishna and not understand anyone else. The Madhyama sees everyone in proper relationship with Krishna. So he sees prema, maitri, kripo, peksha, it says. With the Lord, he sees four categories of individuals. The Lord, the devotees of the Lord, the innocent, like you're saying, the ignorant, who just don't know, and the envious, the demonic. The Lord, prema, it says. You love the Lord. And you develop a relationship with the Lord. With the devotees, maitri. You cultivate friendship. Maitri. With the innocent, kripa. You show them mercy. You show them compassion. You see what their condition is. You understand this person is suffering. He or she doesn't know why they're suffering. Let me help. So he's compassionate. And the envious, upeksha. You avoid them, he says basically. You ignore them. Stay away from them. The demonic. And envious means those who are actively in the business of hating the Lord. Those are what you call the demonic. People like Hiranyakashipu, Ravan. Those who are actively on a mission to fight God. There's not so many people in the world, but there are such individuals. Hanuman Swami makes the nice point that not just that you find such individuals prowling the streets, but such individuals are present in our own hearts. That each one of us, we have demonic qualities also. We have these bad, envious qualities. So in other living entities, in other persons, even other devotees, when we encounter that demoniac quality, that demoniac spot in them, then we stay away, we avoid. That this is not something I want to deal with. Yeah. No, for the demonic, you let Krishna fight them. You see? Hiranyakashipu, Prahlad didn't fight him. He waited till Lord Nrisimhadev appeared. Because the demoniac, only Krishna can deal with. What we can deal with are the innocent or the ignorant. Some people display some demoniac quality out of ignorance, right? That's okay. But when someone is actively, they're displaying some kind of hatred against God or his devotees, we avoid. Like Hanuman Swami likes to say, we duck. We try to make sure we miss, yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. See, the thing is, in a situation like that, it's said when you have a situation where someone's insulting the Lord or insulting the devotees of the Lord, then there's different methods that are prescribed for dealing with it. This is a good question. There are different processes. The first thing that is said is that you should destroy that person by way of argument. Whatever their criticism is, you should silence them by proper argument. If for some reason you think that you cannot do that, you don't feel capable yourself, or you find that they're not going to listen or they're not going to stop no matter what you do, then you try to find someone who can. You go to someone who's capable of doing it. And if that's not possible either, then you simply go away from the situation. You leave. You disappear. And it's described here in this purport also that in the second definition of Kanishtha Madhyam Uttam is that a Madhyam Adhikari is someone who has firm faith in Krishna, in the scriptures, in the path of spiritual life, but is not always able to convince others, to convey that faith to others. The Uttama Adhikari is seen by the fact that he can take anyone and change their heart and convince them of Krishna. In other words, they're basically empowered by the Lord himself. They receive that potency that the Lord has of being able to encounter a demon and kill him. Kill him not in the sense of physically, like Krishna does, but kill his demoniac mentality and change his heart. So someone like Narada Muni, for example, could encounter Mrigadi, the hunter. Someone who was so cruel that he was leaving animals, right? He would, not just killing them for his livelihood, which hunters do, right? But breaking their legs, breaking their limbs, and letting them die half in pain, right? He would go and he'd half kill them, and then he'd come back the next day, and he'd love to watch them suffering in pain and die slowly. And that's about as demoniac as you can get. It said that any person can understand Krishna consciousness, except for one who kills animals. It's what to speak of someone killing animals by the slow, torturous method. But Narada Muni was so powerful that when he came into his presence, you can imagine how much anger and hatred and demoniac qualities such a person must have. When Narada Muni came into his presence, when Narada Muni arrived there, all the animals he was aiming at, they all ran away, because when someone comes, he was quietly there, and ready to shoot, and then Narada Muni arrives and all the animals run because of the noise created. And so he's extremely angry. And normally he would just get out and he's ready to just, you know, a volley of curses and bad words. But he comes in Narada Muni's presence and just no words come out of his mouth. No bad words. Instead he ends up saying, "Oh, my dear saintly person, oh, how wonderful you've come here. Why is it that you've scared away the animals I've been trying to kill here?" and he can't figure out, why am I speaking so beautifully, so softly? And he wants to curse and scream and yell, because this is what he does, you know? But the only thing will come out of his mouth is sweet words. Because he's in the presence of an Uttamadhikari Vaishnava, who is practically like Krishna himself in his potency. That in his presence, all these demoniac qualities, they just run away, like the animals, poof, they're gone. And the person cannot even find his own demoniac qualities. Right? He converts that person. If we don't have that capability, see, the main point is we should understand our own position, our own ability. And that's why honesty is so important in spiritual life, that we be honest about where we're at ourselves. Because if we don't have that ability to change others' hearts, and we try to do it, we'll put ourselves into a mess. We'll end up getting our hands dirty and falling ourselves into the mud. Because you get into a fight, you know, what's the saying in English? You play with fire and you get burnt. Right? You get involved, you start digging in the dirt, you're going to get your hands dirty. Right? So unless you know that, you know, it's like someone who has an infectious disease, a really bad disease. Unless you're a doctor, you shouldn't go close. Right? If you think you're a doctor, and you go close and you're not, you're going to get the disease yourself. But a doctor knows how I can deal with this person. I can even deal with his blood without getting infected myself. So we have to be honest about our own level, our own situation, our own platform. And then we can say, okay, I'm not capable of changing the heart of Mrigadi. Let me go by another path. Let me avoid him. To the point that we can change someone's heart, we can do it. But when we realize, no, this is beyond my capability, then okay, I stay away. This is the quality of a Madhyamadhikari. He knows his own limits. Right? He knows his own capabilities. I'm capable of doing this, but beyond this I cannot do anymore. Therefore, I stay away. Is that okay? Yeah, okay. So in the first definition, the Uttama, the last one we didn't do, the Uttama Adhikari is someone who sees everyone in relation. Sorry. Sees everyone as equal. Everyone in relation with Krishna. He doesn't see anyone as a demon. Why? Because really, when he's there, No one can display their demoniac qualities. Really, in his presence, everyone becomes a Vaishnava. That's his potency, that's his power. So he doesn't need to see anyone with as a... And you see that with advanced devotees. Even people who are very bad qualities, they come in their presence and, you know, the bad qualities... With us, so many bad qualities will be displayed. But in their presence, the bad qualities are gone. Because, really, they can see everyone as a Vaishnava because in front of them, all these bad qualities, they run away like anything. They just disappear. This is their potency, this is their quality. This is the Uttamadhi. And the definition being given in the verse itself, Nindadi Shunya Hridam, which means what? His heart is completely free of the tendency to criticize others. That's the definition of a pure devotee given. But bhajanam anyam, ananyam, it says he's worshipping unalloyed, unfocused, completely focused on Krishna. His bhakti, and he's not inclined to criticize anyone else. His heart is completely free of the desire for criticism. Now, I want to go back to the question you asked earlier, which we said we'd put on hold. All of us have to endeavor to rise to the platform of Uttamadhikari. This is our goal. Prabhupada says later on in the purport, we should not be satisfied to remain neophyte or even Madhyama. We have to work towards getting to the platform Uttama. That's the platform of pure devotional service. That's the Mahabhagavata. We all have to get there because that's where you can really perform bhakti to the Lord. Krishna, he's attracted to the heart of a devotee who's completely free of the desire to criticize others. Such a heart is very, very attractive to the Lord. Krishna, it's one of the qualities of pure bhakti, right? Is Shri Krishna Karshini. Pure bhakti attracts even Krishna himself. But Krishna is attracted by the quality of one's heart, and especially the heart of a devotee which is completely pure, free of completely any desire to criticize anyone else. Krishna is irresistibly attractive to such a person. And practically, that person has Krishna under his control. So we all have to endeavor to try to get to that point, to develop that. But the question can be raised, is, okay, I'm trying to get there, yet I'm currently at the stage of Madhyama Adhikari. I'm initiated and I'm trying seriously to follow the principles of devotional service. So then, how am I supposed to deal with someone when I encounter a Kanishtha Adhikari? I encounter someone who requires help, who requires compassion, right? Prema, Maitri, Kripa, Apeksha. That person requires Kripa, requires compassion. Means you see that person's shortcomings and you want to help them. But how can you see a person's shortcomings if you cannot see any criticism, any fault in anyone? Then how are you going to help them? How are you going to show compassion? It seems like a contradiction. So the point is, the idea is that when the Uttamadhikari, he's free of the desire to criticize anyone else. What does that mean? Is that when we see a shortcoming in another individual, then we see that individual as someone deserving of compassion or help. Instead of someone who is at fault, someone who has a problem, someone we get angry at, or someone we develop hatred for. This is the difference. Is that between an advanced devotee and a neophyte devotee. That normally when we see someone who say is envious or demoniac, then the natural reaction is we develop envy towards them. We develop hatred towards them. We develop anger towards them. We react in the same way that they react to us. They're throwing us envy or anger or whatever, so we react back in the same way. Tit for tat kind of thing. Someone who doesn't see, who is free of the desire to criticize others, right? Nindadi shunya hridam. Someone who's free of the desire to create, it's not that he doesn't see where people are at. It's not that Narada Muni didn't see that Prakadi needed help. It's not that he didn't say, oh, what a wonderful man you are. No, he didn't say that. But he didn't develop any hatred or any anger towards such a person. But rather thinking, oh, this person is an object of our compassion. So the heart becomes softer when a person sees someone with a shortcoming or is attacked or insulted by someone with a shortcoming. The most wonderful or striking example of this is when Jesus is hanging on the cross. Right? Here's someone who's been tortured and put through so much suffering. The crown of thorns, having to carry his own cross, being beaten and knocked over, and humiliated, insulted, hung like an ordinary, like a common criminal on either side, were ordinary criminals of his cross. And still, when he's hanging there, what does he request the Lord? What does he say? Please forgive them, they know not what they do. In other words, he didn't say, my Lord, these people have no problem, they're fine. No, that's not what he said. He saw that these people had committed an offense. Right? Otherwise, why would he ask the Lord to forgive? He saw them for what they were. These people have committed a horrible offense against the Son of God. Right? But they know not what they do. Please forgive them. In other words, because of that, instead of developing anger or hatred or resentment or whatever it might be, right, they look at such a person, people who've done such horrible things to him, and say, my Lord, please forgive them. In other words, they become an object of compassion. That's what it means to be nindadi shunya hidam, to have a heart that is free of the desire for criticism. This is a very important point, because sometimes people think freedom from the desire to criticize others means turning a blind eye to everything in this world. Having some kind of an artificial blurry vision that you can't see people for who they are. No one can live life like that in this world. That's not the point, going around artificially and saying, oh, you're wonderful even though you're torturing animals to death. No, that's not what we do, right? That's artificial, that cannot be real. We have to see things as they are. This is the whole point of the verse, viveka, the power of distinguishing things. But the question is, when you see that shortcoming, how do you react to it? That's the question. Normally the reaction in this world is criticize them, put them down, point it out. A devotee's reaction is help them, lift them up. Let's show compassion to them, help them improve. And if they don't, pray to the Lord. I can't do it, this person is too demoniac, you please help them. I'm not capable, they've practically killed me, you please help them. Right? But the heart is completely soft, it's completely empty of any bad qualities. That's nindadi shunyadam. So that's how we can strive to be an uttamadhikari while at the same time living practically in this world. Because sometimes it's very easy. Devotees often dismiss the uttamadhikari. Oh, that's uttamadhikari. I'm not at that stage, you know. It's okay. Therefore, I don't have to work. No. We want to be there. We want to be uttamadhikari. But we can do it practically. There is a practical way of doing it. Krishna consciousness is a practical philosophy. It's not an artificial philosophy. Okay, any questions or comments? Yeah. We can start on the process of back to Godhead. We can make good progress. Unless we get some special mercy. Krishna can make circumstances such that he can quickly elevate us to the point of uttama. Right? But no one can enter the spiritual world with a heart that is still desiring criticizing others. Right? This is the point. Krishna, a dirty heart cannot enter the spiritual world. Krishna doesn't like... I mean, this is why we came down to the material world in the first place. Right? Is when the heart gets polluted. Unless that heart is purified, we cannot go back. The point is, Krishna can arrange things. He's so compassionate. He's so kind. Right? Prabhupada talks about that again later in the purport. Lord Chaitanya is Patita Pavan, the savior of the most fallen. that Krishna can help us to quickly advance, to make up the difference. But if we want, if we enjoy that process of criticism, then Krishna cannot help us. If we're trying to get rid of it, but we're having trouble, then Krishna will show His special mercy. And sometimes He'll put us in very intense circumstances in order that we can get over it. We can advance very quickly. But if someone is attached to that activity, they like to do it, they find enjoyment in it, then Krishna says, okay, then that means you're attached to the material world. That means you like to be here. Then why will I take you to the spiritual world? If you like to be here, then you can stay here. But if you don't want to stay here, you're trying to get over it, but you're having trouble, I understand. You've been here for millions of lifetimes, it's tough. It's difficult getting over it in one life. So I'll help you out. So that's where the intent becomes very important. That what are we doing? Are we sincerely trying to recover from that propensity to criticize? Or are we, you know, enjoying it? Are we engaged in it? Are we, you know, relishing it? And then that's a different thing. Right? But basically, the point is, yes, we have to come to the point of uttama. We have to come to the point of having a pure heart, to go to the spiritual. However that happens. Yeah. Say that again.
How do we develop the quality of
We forgive them by, yeah. How do we forgive people when we see that they're repeatedly committing the same offense or the same activity? How do we develop the strength to forgive such an individual or such persons? Basically by remembering the example of Lord Chaitanya in our own spiritual masters. We have to remember, we have to understand that we've been committing the same sinful activities for millions and millions of lifetimes. And yet now when we come before Krishna and we request to engage in a devotional service, Krishna, at least Lord Chaitanya, He's willing to forgive everything in an instant. He's willing to say, it's okay. And then we go back and we do it again. And then Lord Chaitanya forgives again. In other words, we're representatives of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And therefore it becomes our duty to try to imbibe His mood and His approach as much as possible. Now, it is also said though, just to balance that, it is also said that of all the offenses to the holy name, one of the offenses, the tenth offense, right, is to commit sinful activities repeatedly, even when you've received so many instructions on the matter. So for someone who's doing that, we have to understand that their progress will be very slow. So again, the point is that we should not develop any anger or any hatred, right? But we can also understand that such a person's progress will be very slow. Because, you know, there's that verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita, right? It was your initiation lecture, actually. Bahu janme kari shravana kirtana, tabe tana paye Krishna prema dhana. That someone can go on chanting the holy names for thousands of lifetimes, and still they won't get love for God. The holy names, which is the most powerful thing in this world, if they're still committing these offenses. So, both things. In other words, that we have to understand, we have to be compassionate, understand, okay, I've been forgiven millions of lifetimes, let me forgive this person also. But let me not be surprised if they're not able to improve themselves. Because someone who's committing offenses like that repeatedly, the tenth offense, repeatedly, and especially if they're doing so knowingly, which is then adds the seventh offense, to commit sinful activities on the strength of the chanting of the holy name. So if you're doing that, then okay, their progress is going to be very slow. I shouldn't be surprised if they're not advancing very quickly. Right? So both things. Again, the idea is we have a realistic understanding of where we're at and where others are at. But at the same time, when we do see everyone in a realistic perspective, we don't allow that to develop into a critical or hateful or angry mentality. Right? That's the basic idea. Yeah.
What you just said is that Would that be like a definition of forgiveness? In other words, I was trying to understand if the word forgiveness is kind of challenging. You use it several times, like you just said, that you allow yourself to your devotion to the compassion, not to think evil thoughts or bad thoughts.
Right. I think that's a nice way to think of it. It's actually very parallel to what humility is also. Humility also is not on a parallel line. It's not self-deprecation. It's not seeing oneself in an artificial way, that oh, I'm the pits and this and that, but seeing things in a realistic perspective, and therefore understanding that I'm so insignificant. Right? So forgiveness also, everything has to begin from the platform of honesty, of seeing things from a realistic perspective. Right? Because if we give forgiveness on the basis of elevating ourselves too much, by saying, I'm so great, therefore I forgive you, then that's not forgiveness. Right? We all have that experience sometimes. You know, someone comes to you and says, I forgive you. What? Forgive me. What I do wrong? Who are you to forgive? Because, you know, it's not coming from a realistic understanding. That person is seeing themselves way up here and me down here, right? On the other hand, if you elevate the person way high up and say, actually, you're the advanced Vaishnava, I'm completely fallen, therefore no problem, then also we're creating, it's artificial. Right? So the first basis is realism, is honesty. We understand I'm here, you're there, right? We understand each other's circumstances. And then we say, despite your shortcomings, despite my shortcomings, still, let's practice forgiveness, let's practice compassion, because look at the Lord. He's been forgiving us so much. Look at our spiritual master. He's willing to accept us, despite the fact that I fall down practically every other day.
Right? At the same time, the fact that the Bible says means we are in your
character. The fact that it?
The fact that things bother us means we are in your character. That means we are progress.
Yes.
Basically, it doesn't disturb us. So yeah. It's in other words, a case for us too, that like, progress and okay.
Right.
Deal with it.
Exactly. Exactly. Because, see, the point is that when you feel compassion towards someone, that's not a disturbing feeling, right?
Yeah.
That when you become disturbed means you're experiencing something else. Mm-hmm. Envy, hatred, anger, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Suppose you see a child crying. You feel compassion, you want to pick them up. You're not disturbed by that, right? Compassion is actually a very nice feeling. You feel good about it. Whereas if you're feeling disturbed, it means there's something more sinister involved. There's something more black there, right, in the heart. That's a very nice point. Another way that one can forgive someone who's been displaying demoniac qualities repeatedly is by depersonalizing it, by understanding that the demoniac qualities, the person is displaying these demoniac qualities, they're not directed at me. These are simply the modes of material nature, this person's nature, their modes, their bad qualities that are acting, and I happen to be here, so I'm the object of it. And this is actually a fact. Someone who has these qualities in their heart, no matter where they go in the world, they'll find someone to display them against. Right? Because the bad qualities are there in the heart. They're present. So you're going to find someone who wants to fight, they'll find someone to fight with. What's his name? This thousand-headed Banasura. He was stomping the whole earth trying to find someone who he could fight with. He had 1,000 arms and he wanted to use them. Right? So someone, if you encounter Banasura, right, and he decides to fight with you and destroy you, then one way of forgiving is to understand, look, I was just in the unfortunate circumstance of having to be present when Banasura arrived. But anyone who had arrived in front of Banasura, he would have destroyed him. Right? So we understand this person's bad qualities are there. Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, everyone is controlled by these three modes of nature. They're pulling everyone. So we understand the three modes of nature are acting, and I am simply happen to be there. Right? I'm simply, unfortunately, the object of that action. Right? So perhaps Krishna wants me to learn also something from this, that he selected me as the recipient of his demoniac qualities. So we just try to avoid as much as possible. So by depersonalizing like that, by separating, by understanding that this person doesn't have anything personally against me, it just seems like that. But really, they're just acting out their own, they're being pulled by the modes of nature. That also can help us develop compassion. Yeah.
The alternative, if this person has the quality of giving the first time, versus
yeah. No. But that's kind of turning it around. I mean, the point is, if someone goes into the corner of your home and points out that it's dirty, you can't blame them and say, it was all fine till you pointed it out, you know? Okay. If they hadn't pointed it out, it's okay, you know? Maybe no one would have noticed it for another 10 years, but eventually someone would have, right? Yeah. So that's a bad quality, definitely, to bring out the worst in someone. That's definitely a Kanishtha mentality, right? The Uttamadhikari is bringing out the best in everyone. He has completely free of the desire to find faults, right? So that's definitely a bad quality. But the fact that he's found something bad in you, that's your own problem. You know, that's not his problem. It's the fact that he found it. It's unfortunate, you know. In other words, it's unfortunate that he goes around looking for your problems. But in some sense, we have to thank him also that he discovered it in me. Maybe I wouldn't have ever noticed the dirty corner in my house, you know. It's like with the Ramachandra Puri and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, right? Ramachandra Puri. His job in Jagannath Puri was fault finding, right? Very Kanishtha devotee, and he'd go into Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's room and he'd look for faults. He'd first of all serve Lord Chaitanya lots of sweets, or for devotees he'd do this, not just Lord Chaitanya, right? He'd invite them for lunch at their home, sannyasis especially. Feed them a lot, give them huge items and make them eat. You must eat, eat more. Yes, I made this, I worked so hard. Please, take more, this is good, take more. And then at the end of it all, he'd count how much they ate. 15 chapatis, 5 sabjis, 2, this is crazy, are you, what kind of sannyasi are you? You're supposed to control your senses, eating so much food, this is crazy, you know. So all the devotees became really disturbed, really saddened. And he did the same thing to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He made him overeat, and then he pointed out faults. He even went to his room and he found ants. And he said, aha, this is a sign that you've been eating sweets. Because ants only come when they're sweets. So, and then so like that. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he took him seriously. He said, of course, he said, aha, this person has found a bad quality in me. He's brought the worst out in me. Right? Let me fix what's bad here. Let me fix it. And he cut down his eating in half. And then I think he cut again in half, something like that. He's eating a quarter of what he normally eats. And all the devotees are really, really distressed, really disturbed. So that was his reaction. But of course, Ramachandra Puri, you know, he was cursed by his own spiritual master because of his fault-finding. So it's not that he got off the hook. He ultimately, his fault-finding led him to the point that he found faults with Madhavendra Puri, his own spiritual master. And that ensured that he went, you know, he's cursed by your own spiritual master. It was just kind of the end of your spiritual life, right? So he was, I don't know what exactly happened to him. I don't know, maybe he got leprosy or something. But anyway, it's not a good condition. So Krishna took care of him, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dealt with him. He showed, okay, how to deal with him. So in other words, that's the point. We let Krishna deal with the envious. And when such things happen, if it's a genuine quality that the envious have brought out within us, then we work on it. We try to fix it. Of course, in Lord Chaitanya's case, it wasn't a genuine quality. So as soon as Ramachandra Puri left, then all the devotees had a big celebration, big feast, and everyone started eating again. And Lord Chaitanya went back up to his usual eating. And all the devotees were very happy, right? So in their case, it was a false criticism. But if you find something genuine, then we can actually be thankful. Sometimes devotees, they ask, how can we figure out what our anarthas are? How can we understand? And I forget who I was listening to in some class, and the devotee speaking said, "It's not difficult, just ask the devotee sitting next to you." So in a community of devotees, there's plenty of people ready to point out your faults. But the question is, you know, the more difficult question is when it's pointed. Usually when the faults are pointed out, they're pointed out with some envy. Right? This is the problem. The person who's pointing it out usually is a little envious. Then the question arises, am I spiritually advanced enough to take that good advice, even when it's coming from someone who doesn't wish me well, who's envious of me? Right? They've shown a black spot on my dhoti. Will I deal with it? Will I clean out the black spot? Even though I know this person's only intention is to make my whole dhoti black. Right? This is what he's trying to do. He wants to point out the black dhoti and put more black spots on my dhoti. And point out to everyone that I have a black dhoti. But still, he's pointed out a real black spot. Do I have the spiritual strength to say, yes, even though it comes from someone who's envious of me, I'll accept it? That's the real tough part. That's when it really gets difficult. Because taking advice from someone whose heart is pure is actually not very difficult. And therefore we should seek out that advice. It's helpful, it's nice. You can trust that person. But very often Krishna gives us advice from places, from hearts that are not pure. He doesn't give advice in the method that's easiest to swallow. Right? It's sometimes advice, you know, like homeopathic medicine, they're easy to swallow, easy to eat. But sometimes medicine comes in big, big pills which are difficult to swallow. The question is, can we deal with it then? Can we accept it then? Anything else? Okay, so we got through one definition of Madhyama, Kanishtha Madhyama and Uttama. There's a whole another set. This is based on how you relate with other devotees, how you deal with others, how you see, distinguish. There's another definition which is based on the development of faith or Shraddha. That's given in, this one we've been talking about is given in Srimad Bhagavatam. The next one that's given is given in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the development of faith. That's another way of understanding where a person's at. And that we'll have to leave to next time. Thank you very much for your attention and participation. And
just in the mood of Ramachandra Puri.